Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Jane Hoffman tonight, and I'm clarifying some things that have gone haywire on social media in the last 2 or 3 days. First of all, I don't have a staked out vengeance for anybody. I live my life, I'm busy. I have a full life, I have 4 jobs, I work at a newspaper. I'm in gambling treatment. I go 3 to 6 hours a week. I also belong to a gym. My son is home 3 nights a week, and 4 days he works at McDonald's, and I give him rides, and we have a busy lifestyle. Oops, I made a mistake. He works at Burger King. Anyways, the fact of the matter is that ventured out on my own on my new radio network, which means that I can be my own boss. John, Bob, and I are not quite at the level yet where we want to go premium, because we've only garnered listeners through Facebook and Twitter, and we don't have 300 live listens a month, which I averaged on Earnest Radio Network. So we're just trying to venture out on our own. And just doing our own thing. But the person who I consider my nemesis at this point, actually, he's just a fallen Christian. He won't repent of his sin, and he will not ask for forgiveness for any wrongdoing he's ever done in his life. So that's basically where I stand. I'm not asking for forgiveness at this point. I'm just asking him not to blog about me. But it is his personal blog, and he can do what he wants. If he has to do immature things at age 46 to glorify himself by putting pornographic videos up and then removing them 24 hours later, let him have his fun. From this day on, I am no longer going to review his personal Tumblr account or whatever the association is. I'm honoring Bob's request to leave it alone. I am going to play a clip right now from an old show on Earnest Radio Network with Earnest, Bob, and me. The first 30 seconds or so is another topic, and then we shift it.
My goodness. Well, his count was low. Get it? His count was low. Oh, mercy. Ernest, tell John your story about Marguerite's marriage proposal.
She proposed?
She's a crazy bitch. What else do you want me to say?
Ernest lived with her.
I can't stand her. I wouldn't cross the street to pee on her if she was on fire.
Wow.
I really don't like her. And when I moved, what Jane is saying, when I moved to Minneapolis, Jane had set me up with Marguerite for a place to stay. And so I was there, and I wasn't there, you know, I'm 1,000 miles away from home, from Oklahoma.
Was this
Minneapolis,
before the movie Jungle Fever?
This was, oh, please, that's not, there is no loco for the coco here, trust me. But I just heard that on TV the other day. Anyway, I'm there like 2 or 3 days. And all of a sudden, she just walks up to me so matter-of-factly and says, Ernest, Jane said you were here to give me a marriage proposal. I'm like, well, Jane lied to your black ass, because ain't nobody going to say that around here.
Wow.
And, you know, it was just this awkward thing with her the whole time that she was always saying that to guys. There were 2 Kevins in her life.
Right.
And she had said something similar to both of them, even though saying she didn't like one of them. She didn't like the black one. She liked the white Kevin. She didn't like black Kevin. You know, and it's like, and it was just this weird thing that she has, and I'm like, you're a crazy bitch. No one's going to marry you. That's why she is who she is now, and she still doesn't have anybody. I mean, she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I can't deal with that chick. If I saw her again, oh, my God, you have no idea how I'd go off if I saw that heifer again.
Wow.
Okay, you know what? I was divorced in 94, but I've had at least 4 marriage proposals in my life, and she used to save him before she met Ernest, like, I can't believe I made it to such and such an age and haven't had a marriage proposal.
Really?
Because you're a mean old bitch, that's why.
I think because she grew up in the South, you know, in a more traditional society, and she dated a brainiac in Madison, Wisconsin, like a hard science major, and they lived together for like 9 to 10 months, but she always talked out loud about what her dreams are and what she couldn't achieve, and she got on the guy's nerves, and he dropped her like a sore thumb.
That sounds about right. She had her temperament wasn't suitable to make things easy, I'll put it that way.
It was kind of like what Jane was describing earlier. It was always a power trip with her. The first night I was there, I had taken a Greyhound from Oklahoma all the way to Minneapolis. So it was like a 2-day trip or something, you know, to get there. I'm exhausted, but she fixes dinner for me. Well, first she's late showing up to pick me up. I mean, I'm sitting there like 20 minutes, like, oh, my God, is this chick just going to stand me up? And then I finally get to her house, and she said, you know, I'm fixing the dinner, and Kevin's coming over. Black Kevin was coming over. And we finished eating, and I get up from the table for a minute just to stretch. And she starts going off on me about how she's not going to clean up my plates and clean up after me. I went to the bathroom and got a huge lecture about leaving the seat up. But I'm like, listen, if you're going to bear your hoo-ha to the world, you need to look where you're sitting first. I don't buy this crap from women anyway about put the seat down. If you're going to expose yourself, you need to know where you're going to be putting it. I do.
Right.
I sit down to do things. I look where I'm sitting. Why can't you? But anyway, with her, it was just one thing after another. I would sleep in. Sunday was one of my only days to sleep in. And normally our schedule, she worked at night, I worked at days, so I didn't have to run into her for days on end sometimes. But on Sundays, I didn't have to go to work till like 11 or 12, so I could sleep in just a little bit. And she would get up, and instead of putting on house slippers, she would put on these clanky-ass flaps with like hard leather soles and just clip-clop around the house like a Clydesdale in heat. You know, and then she'd turn on the TV, and she'd watch CBS This Morning. Of course, I'm sleeping in the living room. You know, don't wait, don't VCR it or anything until later. Just do it right then when I'm in bed and the TV is like 15 feet from my head. And it was that kind of bullshit all the time from her. So when I left her house and moved in, I got a room in St. Paul in this big house. When I left, she was out of town in Tennessee visiting her drunk mother for a few days or something. And so what I proceeded to do was I took all my stuff out of the house. I didn't take anything of hers. And whenever I would, like, open a drawer or pull something out, I would just not put it back the way that I found it. And I went through her freezer. I cooked all of her food and ate it. She didn't have a lot, but she had, like, a chicken, you know, like a whole chicken. I cooked that up, you know, roasted it up like a turkey. Ate her leftover pizza, which she just hated because she always marked me, you know, my pizza, don't eat any. You know, ate all of that. And I didn't clean up the kitchen. I just, like, left the carcass and the pan it was in, just on the table.
That's not so nice.
It looked like it had been ransacked, but it was just really not. I didn't follow through when I was getting my stuff. And I left, and I moved out, and that was the last time. Well, I saw her, like, one other time because I forgot to leave one of the three keys, and her and Jane showed up at my work, and
she got interesting. Based on Slick's handbook of women abuse, she would be more attracted to you at the end of that week. She'd be like, I got to get back in contact with them because I have no power.
Yeah. I think she tried to call me once or twice, but I had nothing to do with her. And she wasn't getting in contact with me for that. She wanted other things. But I was not, I had no interest in ever talking to her again. And I emailed her a couple of years ago and tried to tell her how I felt and what, you know, my perspective of how things had happened. And all she did was tell me that I was a child and needed to grow up. I'm like, well, there's the answer that I need right there. After all this time, she won't even acknowledge that she might have done something wrong, said something a little off, you know, contributed to a situation that wasn't good for either of us. She took absolutely no responsibility in it. So I'm like, okay, you know what? Maya Angelou said when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And she did, and I believe her. And that's why I still don't talk to her. It's that simple.
I remember that you, me, and Keisha, somehow something initiated something where I asked you to make peace with her, and you followed through, but then
No, I never had the intent of making peace with Marguerite. Let's make that clear right now. I never had the intent to make peace with Marguerite. And Keisha, I forget who she was, but I remember talking to her, only had the same kind of stories for me about Marguerite. So I knew I wasn't crazy or just making stuff up. I knew that, you know, I had a case because
well,
I keep hearing the same thing from other
people.
Well, you know
what Marguerite did as a result of that? After you and Keisha told Margarita, she sent a blind carbon copy to my twin sister and all my friends saying that you and Keisha were abusive to her and this is what she's had to put up with and this is
why. Oh, yeah, because it went on. Yeah, that's the first time I had talked to her since 97. And when was that we were doing that? It was during MySpace days,
like
so it had to be like
2007.
Yeah, it was 07. So literally 10 years later, look, not that anybody deserves abuse, but she deserves a little backlash for how she treats people. You know, you put shit in, you get shit out, and that's what you keep getting. And that's why she's 50 years old and probably living in some hot hotel where she has to do dishes to cover part of her rent.
Wow. So no Beatles reunion for you guys. And
No, she was the yoga. And listen, it didn't really... And it kind of caused a rift between Jane and I, but I kind of felt like, and it did for years, actually, but I kind of felt like because Jane didn't really hear my side of it, and I didn't know that I didn't think she was taking Marguerite's side. She just never asked me what happened. You know, and so that caused a rift with Jane and I for a long time.
I didn't like how you burned her in that one situation with the phone.
Oh, yeah, I had run up a phone bill, but, you know, that's a small price to pay. Well, that was the days before everybody had long distance or even cell phones, so, you know.
Well, actually, right. She did have to pay $800 or $900 to cover the debt.
Good. Serves her right. I don't regret that at all. I just don't.
Well, I would have.
I know. Life's too short to regret anything. And look, what's happened's happened. And, you know, if she had tried to be human to me... The one other time I had tried to talk to her, she had pulled a security guard to my workplace, you know, that time when she wanted her key. Like, what am I going to do in the middle of the Mall of America? I mean, I'm selling CDs. What do you...
The reason I played that is because I was trying to show an example of one of the two biggest problems between Ernest and I, and that is that he never... was sorry that it was actually a $1,200 phone bill. And I was 5 or 6 months pregnant when I paid for her rental car to go to Kentucky for Christmas because I felt so bad that my other friend rang up a phone bill that steep. Now, I can forgive Ernest for ringing up my twin sister's phone bill in L.A. because he was a punk kid back then, just out of the Navy. He didn't know himself. And he called the gay hotline for $300 over a 30-day period. Luckily, my sister had just gotten married. She had abandoned the apartment and let him stay there for free. But he still violated a church member's trust by doing that and embarrassed Paul and Becca. Now, this show is not about rehashing the past or sins. I'm giving a timeline so I can once and for all settle this matter and move on. I met Ernest at the church in approximately, it was the spring of 1990, and my play was being produced by Larry Welch and Believer's Repertory Company. He was staying with Becca and Paul, and he had worked at Warner Brothers as a temp, and then he moved to the St. Moritz, and he showed up at the church theater company, which was in Hollywood, to help with the lighting of the show, and he was good at it. We became friends, and we hung out here and there, and he played at a couple of the church talent shows. He was good musically on the piano. Then he moved back to Oklahoma after his uncle sent him back there. And because he rang up the phone bill at my sister's, he was shipped back to Oki. And then, I don't know, there was some kind of issue on whether he should live with his father and stepwife or whatever, or his real mom and her husband. Well, his real mom was never that warm to him, so he went to go live with his dad, and then he got a job at Arby's in a hotel, and he moved in with his two stepbrothers. Later on, he narked on his dad about sexual abuse, and his dad got to serve time for that because he abused his stepbrother. Then I had worked at a daycare and a disabled facility for a few months in Minnesota after my divorce. Well, I guess the daycare was more like a year and a half, and the disabled facility was from 95 to 96. I went to San Francisco to be a nanny for a couple of months, and the lady was kind of bitchy, but I liked the husband. He was cool, but then it didn't work out. So then my twin sister said I could either move to L.A., and I don't know, I wasn't ripe for living in a big city at that point. I had plenty of savings. I had $12,000 to $14,000 because I had lived with my parents for a year after the divorce. So I had a white Taurus station wagon, and I stayed in Button Willow by Bakersfield one night, and I went to go visit my sister in L.A., and then I decided to go spend the rest of the summer with Ernest in Oklahoma. He lived in a nice apartment. It was kind of long, and it had, like, white stucco walls, like, with kind of adobe style, like, with rounded doors. And I stayed with him 2 months, but it was super, super, super hot there. And it was hotter than a bitch. And by the way, I did pay the rent both of those months because I had money back then. I didn't pay half. I paid all. And then I moved into an apartment up in the north side of town, like on 85th. And I had a job at Children's World. And I had my own apartment, and it had central air, and it was much nicer. I didn't really have a heart for Oklahoma. I liked his friend Rod and Ann, but I didn't have a sense of foundation there, even though it was kind of a church town and they had a lot of good churches. But it was hotter than a bitch there, and I just couldn't stand it. So my mom was on oxygen still, so I drove back up to the Twin Cities in the fall of 96, and my friend Jackie, who I worked with at Amethyst Services, she got me a job at Portland Residence, which is now closed. It was the last large facility for disabled people. So I worked there a year and a half, and I started dating Paul, my fiance. And at that, in November of that year, I believe, I guess it was 96. No, in March of 97, Ernest decided to move to Minneapolis. But him and Marguerite was more of a pen pal situation where I introduced them, but then they corresponded by letter. And technically it was her idea to have him stay with her. She had only lived in the Twin Cities about a year to a year and a half, and she was kind of lonely, I think. But like Ernest mentioned in the audio, she had men in her life. She should have liked the black Kevin because he was cool and had his own shop, but she went for this white hipster dude. So they lived together a while. My mother was still alive back then, but they argued and he split. And then he moved to St. Paul, and I didn't even really know where he went. I think maybe I talked to him once after he moved to that East St. Paul house. But I was kind of wrapped up with my fiance, and we had gone to Mazatlan that spring in the April. And it's not like I was being a bad friend, but I wasn't the best friend to him because my boyfriend at the time didn't like Ernest. And he judged him because he was overweight. Well, Paul and I went out for a year and 4 months, and then relationship fizzled. And then I was on a rebound relationship with my son's dad, and I got pregnant about the second or third date. He was a cool guy from West Africa and kind of a quiet person with not much to say. So then I had to cope with a pregnancy. Ernest pretty much disappeared into thin air. My mother died in May or June of 98, and I don't think I tried calling Ernest again until 99 or 2000 after I had already relocated to Los Angeles. I remember I called him once from the Sunset Strip, and he was indifferent. Then in 2001 to 2002, I was working at an office supply company with John Yoder, and Ernest wrote a mean letter to my boss for no particular reason. Like, we didn't have a confrontation. He just wanted to badmouth me. So that's kind of a mean thing to do. It would be like if I got a hold of his employer in New York, like Walmart or the music box store, and wrote fax to email to his boss. Like, it was just completely inappropriate. And my boss, who was Brian, didn't know what to think of it. So I just said that this person has anger issues and he's trying to pay me back somehow, and I'm not sure why he did that. I didn't lose my job or anything. In December of 2012, I left that company, but John continued to work there until 2013. And I ended up working at Washington Mutual and also the United States Post Office and for the Census Bureau. Plus, I started grad school in the fall of 2003. I also moved to the Valley with Wade and his friends because Lauren and I wanted to get out of East Los Angeles. So basically, after I moved to the Valley, life was a little better. Lauren was in a good kindergarten in 2003 or 2004, and he started first grade, I believe, in either early 2004 or 2005. So I didn't hear from Ernest until years, and I don't remember how we reconnected, but in 2010, we started the radio show together. He wanted to add some more shows to the network. He had his own show, and I listened to the pilot, but I didn't participate. He was friends with a girl named Brandy who had a really good, really good music show out of Michigan, and then she moved to the South. Brandy was cool, and I liked her a lot. Well, him and Brandy had an abrupt rift, and I remember she called me, and she asked me what the hell was going on, and she left him messages, and he wouldn't pick up, and she sent him emails, and he wouldn't pick up. And he basically blew her off because he felt like she downgraded him about one or two comments she made to him. I don't remember if it was on the air or by email. Needless to say, she went off the radio network for a while, and I continued to become closer friends with Ernest, and I gave him back my trust. I forgave him for blackballing my sister and Marguerite, and I felt like, personally, I felt like there's still something a bit off about him as far as the way he treated people. But as a Christian, I wanted to give him a benefit of the doubt. Well, I had good years from 2010 to 2013 because I received my inheritance in 2011. And I paid off student loans. And I did have low-income housing for less than a year. But then when I reported to them I got an inheritance, my rents shot back up to $900. So I was living in the complex with Bob, by the way, and Bob and I became friends, and now he's on my radio network. Well, John Yoder and I have been close friends since 2001. He's never, ever abandoned me. But Ernest and I became closer, and I took him and Brian to Janet Jackson for their birthdays, but I really only wanted to take Ernest, but he cajoled me into taking Brian because he wanted Brian to go because it was his birthday week. It's not something I would ask of a friend if I was shelling out between $120 and $150 for one ticket, but I did it, and I just did it to keep the peace. I'm not angry about it. I just thought it was nervy. Then we went to the JJ concert. It was a one-day trip. We came back that night. Then I flew to Philadelphia a few weeks later, and I hadn't seen him since. Basically, I've gotten along with him pretty much for two or three years, but then when I moved to Minnesota, I didn't take the right direction in my life. I moved here for a cheesy job. It wasn't good paying, and it was an average job. You know, it had ups and downs. Some real good things and some real bad things. But I got diverted off the track and I started gambling a lot in the fall of 2012. I didn't really lighten up until the spring of 2014, and I did some stupid things, and I was immature, and basically I got myself in trouble. Well, then through spiritual work and going to treatment for 6 to 9 months, which, well, it's about 8 months right now, the person I offended, you know, and I reconciled, and everything got straightened out. And now I'm just trying to live my life. I barely have time even to do the radio shows. I just have to make time. Sometimes I pull 20-hour shifts. Sometimes I don't. I did back off for a month from, like, October 1st to October 20th. I took 3 weeks off my third job, and I was debating whether to stay or leave. Well, now my client is leaving to another company, and I'm probably going to shift companies here. I want to stay with my own company, but it just depends where they put me. I'm also converting my California license to Minnesota, and California has a lot of job openings, so I might go back there or go to Mississippi where I hold another teaching degree. So basically, I've forgiven that person, but the only thing that bothers me is that he flames the fans, or fans the flames, by putting stuff like I'm old and lonely when I'm not. I've had a boyfriend for a month. I've had other offers, but my life is so busy now, and I'm just trying to focus on paying my bills. Plus, my rent went up $75 this fall. So I'm just trying to survive. I don't like dwelling on the negative. I have good people in my life, like my twin, John, Bob, Yale, Gil, Tony, Gladys, Gail, Ken, and my older sister, Nancy, and about 7 to 9 friends in the Twin Cities that I went to high school with. But I have lived a very diverse life. I've lived in 8 cities in 7 different states. I've bounced around a lot, and now I'm a parent, and I have to stay grounded because my son is autistic. And the only time in the last 20 years that I almost threw my life away was this past year with gambling. And I think it got to the point where I was down to $4,000. I didn't have enough money to move back to LA, and I was just trying to self-destruct because I couldn't get out of here. Now I've accepted the fact that I live here, and I like it here, and there's a lot more natural beauty to meet the eye, like wolves and owls and deer in the backyard, and it's just hard living away from my twin sister. So I would call this home in one sense. I live in my father's hometown, but in another sense, you know, you kind of leave your... I saw this documentary where it says you leave your parts of yourselves in different cities, and that's kind of how I feel. I have a lot of friends. Part of my heart's with Yale. Part of it's with my sister. But Lauren is with me now, and I also... I had a 19-year-old here all summer, and that was really beneficial because he helped with chores, and he was also a good companion for Lauren and I, and... you know, like, he'd do things that Lauren wouldn't, like take the garbage out late at night. And I'm blessed because every day we just have to live one day at a time. You can't live more than one day at a time. And whether we die, if we died tomorrow getting run over by a Mack truck, or if we died in a freak accident, like, let's say, one of the skyways in downtown Duluth collapsed. I mean, that would be it. So we shouldn't really spend our lives torturing other people and condemning them for their sins. But I really have a hard time with people who are unapologetic, you know, that really, honestly, sincerely do not care about other people, are out to destroy them, have no respect for other people at all, just constantly criticizing people. And I've done a lot for Ernest, you know. Last summer I sent him a lot of... I did things because I wanted to help him, and I don't feel like he's gotten the proper love in his life. he only had one relationship in his whole life, and it was a failed one, but he's still friends and roommates with that person. So, I mean, no one's condemning him for trying, but if you look at some of his YouTube videos, he's pretty dogmatic. You know what I'm saying? Like, he thinks that if people don't think the way he does, or they don't accept homosexuals and transgender people in a certain kind of way, that they're complete idiots. And that's just, that's not how it works in life, you know? I mean, we just have to accept people for who they are, and I don't want to be forced to become more dogmatic just because of his belief system, but he's become too rigid in his belief system. So here's my final thoughts. And the hate. Love all people.